Shauger, I know your job, you're predominantly a hockey guy. Were you caught up in Game 6 of the Raptors last night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely had it on and watched the last. I had it on sort of the first half, was puttering, but then sat down and watched the second half. It was great, man. Super entertaining and, you know, amazing to see. It was awesome. I just, it was great. And I think kind of odd that they give the trophy to ownership before they give it to the players. It's a little bit different.
Dude, it is it just sucked. It always just, to me, kind of sucks the life out of the response and the energy. Like, you know, good for Serge Ibaka to give it to Kyle Lowry. But other than that, you didn't really – and maybe it's because I just saw the St. Louis Blues and every player gets his time with the cup. And even though the Blues were, like, probably the shortest cup carriers I think I recall, but nonetheless, I definitely looked at the two celebrations and I felt like the Blues players really got to celebrate it as a team for a short period of time before having everybody else. Whereas in this one, it was almost everybody right away and the owners before the players.
Yeah. You know, it's just different. And basketball is not the only sport that does it that way. So it's just different. But the one thing I'll say that I really liked about the Blues, and I was paying attention, they got to the handshakes really fast, which I like. I mean, it's really hard for the team that loses to stand out there and sit there and watch and watch and watch. And there are some years where the teams just milk it. And it goes on and on and on. I liked how a couple of the St. Louis Blues players were actually like rallying guys like, come on, let's go do this. Let's go do this. Then they got the handshakes done quickly. I like the sportsmanship with that so that the Bruins could do their salute to the fans and get the heck off the ice. But yeah, last night was, I mean, they all stand up on that stage and they're all kind of there. And, you know, I thought that reporter did a really good job, really, really thought she did a good job with the questions that she asked and gathering people. And, you know, that's a tough gig to be live inside the arena like that and to be trying to corral people and gather people, and she's just a veteran pro. But it was good. Yeah, it was really neat to watch it all play out.
It's interesting how many kids I've seen, and that's really where it starts when you want growth and grassroots, is how many kids were out in the basketball courts here in the last month, kind of getting caught up in it. And I'm very curious to see, you know, what Basketball Canada can do, because we've had a lot of people texting already that, you know, it's hard to find. We'll have Paul Sir on the show on Monday, but I'm very interested to see how they're going to have this excitement level and turn it into more programs to get kids playing more and obviously maybe better coaching and stuff, because right now the Prairie provinces are virtually non-existent representation when it comes to elite basketball players on the men's side. It's just not there, right? Like, you've had Olynyk and Nash from BC, and then all the other good ones come from specifically Ontario. And, you know, the Raptors definitely have played a part in that. And I'm curious to see how they can roll it out. Because hockey, Shauger, we never had kids in Western hockey. They only had the Leafs and the Habs, right? They didn't have anybody else to, quote, look up to, but they still developed. And I think that's the one thing that I'm curious to see how basketball does that moving forward.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, they need to figure out the best way to take the environment that we're in and leverage it and turn it into momentum in different areas where it's not traditionally, you know, where the momentum doesn't traditionally exist on its own. And yeah, it's a great opportunity for them. I mean, you know, the basketball court in my cul-de-sac, you know, there's kids out there every night, and there were, you know, there are kids fairly often out there before, but definitely more through these playoffs. And so how do you leverage that? What do you do? And, you know, you take, I don't know if there's more funding available or whatever it is, but it's not, you know, it's a ball, right? It's a ball and some running shoes too, which is great. It's not hockey. It's not some of these other sports that you do where it's such a huge investment off the top as well. So making it more accessible for more people shouldn't be that difficult. So yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what the 5-year legacy is of this Raptors championship.
Well, yeah, a lot of it's going to depend on if Kawhi Leonard, like, when your best player, especially in basketball, if you're able to keep him, then you're going to have a better chance to maintain success, because the NBA is, of the four, it's the hardest one to win if you haven't won before, right? There's only 12 organizations that have won in 40 years, and, you know, every other league has 17 up to 21 in hockey, basketball, hockey, NFL, and the MLB. So that part of it's going to be interesting.
Doesn't it feel to you like Kawhi's leaving? Like, I've been paying attention to all of his interviews and listening to everything that he's saying and watching his body language, and I don't purport to know the guy really well or anything like that, but just feels to me like he's gone.
Yeah. You could be right. It's, well, I like winning. I've talked to a lot of players, and at first they didn't love going to a new city. And then when they got there and they got comfortable, and all of a sudden, especially when they had success, it really changed their mindset, right? Like, I've seen it firsthand with Edmonton Eskimo players, and, you know, they're talking guys who never been to Canada, didn't want to come to Canada, started out, okay, you know, they'd leave the minute the season was over, and they'd come the last day before camp, and then all of a sudden it changed, and many of them, you know, moved there because they just fell in love with it, and that became their new life. Now, that was over years, right? Kawhi's only had 1 year in Toronto, so maybe it's easier to leave, but it will be interesting to see if he does leave. I don't think it weakens it. I think what will happen, though, for Raptor fans, like, you never take the championship away and you've won it all, but it'll probably be somewhat of a bitter pill that next year, if all of a sudden in opening night, he's not on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a major setback, and it'll be disappointing. I mean, he's just such a huge part of all of this, but I mean, they knew that when they traded for him, right? Like, they understood that it might just be a one-and-done type scenario. And I'm sure they have hopes and best intentions, but it's a risky move, too, at the same time. But it paid off, man. Like, it paid off big time. And if it's not him, and again, I don't necessarily follow the game as closely, but if they have the money available to them to keep a player like that and he decides to go elsewhere, well, that's, you can still spend that money, and you can still improve your basketball team or help your basketball team. So in an ideal world, he sticks around and Raptor fans get to watch him, and a generation of young basketball players in Canada get to watch him do his thing in Toronto for longer. But, you know, I don't think that if he doesn't stay, you know, the impact of this championship has to diminish things that much. It'll be disappointing, but I think you can still capitalize on what's happened here, what we've all been watching and witnessing. I think can still have a really nice bump for the sport in this country, whether Kawhi Leonard stays or not.
Oh yeah, no, that's fair. Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, we said we were just going to wait until the Stanley Cup wrapped up, and boom, we're going to see some trades. Well, we see one today. Matt Niskanen going to Philadelphia for Radko Gudas, and he has a 5.5 cap hit. The Flyers absorb that, and they pay 30% of Gudas's contract. Like, Washington clearly gave up the better player here, but they're freeing up some cap space. I'm very interested now who they're going to look at, because, you know, to make that move, you obviously feel like you're either going to keep all your guys internally, maybe Brett Connolly, or look in the free agent market. This was a fascinating trade. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I think so. And I sort of read the same thing that you do, that it has the optics of creating space, has the optics of the first domino in maybe a couple of moves that could potentially follow. They are going to want to keep their own people, I would assume. I mean, Brett Connolly, if they can, has been a good contributor for them. So when you see trades like this where teams are clearly, you know, clearing up space in advance of the free agent courting period, maybe, you know, they've had their negotiations and they know what it's going to take and are now posturing and putting themselves in a position to go ahead and do that. So we'll see. But this is where you lock your guys down. We just saw the Islanders get that done with Jordan Eberle before it got to a free agent courting period. And maybe the Capitals are looking to do something similar.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, I don't think I asked you this question, so I will. We discussed it earlier in the week. You can only pick one. Mitch Marner, Braden Point, Mikko Rantanen, Matthew Tkachuk, Sebastian Aho. They're all RFAs.
Yeah.
You get to pick one. And let's just say the money's even. Who do you like the most and why?
Yeah, great question. I mean, Braden Point has been playing on a team with other really high-end offensive guys and has been putting up impressive numbers in a group. And I think if given the opportunity to beat a guy somewhere and not necessarily play with such, you know, high-end offensive guys around him, I wonder where he could push his totals. Honestly, though, after just having watched a Boston-St. Louis Stanley Cup and watched the way they play and watched what it takes in the toughest of series to get through, I might lean towards Tkachuk because he can play it any way you want to play it. He's got tons of skill, high-end point potential, but he can grind, he can be a pest, he can be a pain in the butt. and he's got gamesmanship all day long. That extra element he has that I don't view any of these other guys as having. So honestly, I might lean in that direction a little bit.
Mm.
Marner's a brilliant player, though. That's the thing. The only question you have is, you insert Mitch Marner into that series that we just watched, is he going to be able to function at as high a level? Is he going to be able to? Jaden Schwartz got shoved out of that series. Marner's he's a brilliant player, probably the best player of them, but I just wonder how he does in a Stanley Cup final like we just watched. And I would have no doubt about Tkachuk's ability to function in that series.
Okay. Rantz,
what'd you say?
I actually said Braden Point because he's a center iceman. And he's tenacious. But I admitted that I was kind of biased because I've seen him the most dating back to junior, and I watched him, and I just seen a player who's dynamic offensively. He kills penalties. He can play in every role for your team, and he'll drop the mitts if you need to. Like, that guy's competitive, and I had him first. But the one player that I actually had second after looking at all the quality of line mates and everything was Sebastian Aho. He's a center, but you look at Marner gets to play with Matthews or Tavares, right? Point does have Kucherov or Stamkos at times. Tkachuk, although he's a lot on the second line, but even at times gets to go with Gaudreau and those guys. Sebastian Aho's line mates aren't close, and MacKinnon and Rantanen, of course. And that's the one thing I looked, and his points per game was right there with those guys. His possession numbers are good. Like, man, Sebastian Aho, the more I look at him, like, that might be the guy. Because I think, Sagar, he might be the one who ends – well, him and Tkachuk might be on the lower – oh, they're all going to be 8 million cap hits, I think. But the lower end of it, and he might end up being the best value contract.
Yeah, I mean, in your hypothetical, they were all signing for the same amount.
Yeah, yeah.
Of those guys and the deals that are going to get done, who ends up earning their money the most? He's also not on an island out there, but he's a heck of a good offensive player, but there isn't necessarily, to your point, a ton around him, and he managed to get a tremendous amount done. I also wonder how much growth there is in his game because he's coming into his own as an offensive player and pushing it to kind of new levels. And if you put the right people around him, you wonder what that might look like for him offensively. So, yeah, he's a good player. And because he's in Carolina, he's a little bit underrated, and maybe other teams don't, or other, fans from other, the casual fan wouldn't know the quality of his game. But, yeah, fantastic player, really good. I don't know about Tkachuk. There's something about the gamesmanship. And when you combine that level of gamesmanship with that level of skill, that's special. And, maybe I'm biased because I just watched the series that I watched, and I was constantly thinking to myself, thinking about different players, who would be able to do this? And it takes a certain type. And there were some who were able to engage and be part of it, and others who were on the outside looking in. And it was really interesting to watch.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins the Sagar. Eskimos at it tonight. What's your expectation of the green and gold this year?
Yeah, good question. So much change, and you wonder, but a lot of teams are enduring that right now. A lot of teams are experiencing, fundamental change, leadership, their quarterback. The Eskimos have a lot, they've had some tough injuries, and they've had some fundamental change. And so would any of us be surprised or be really hard on them if they had a bit of trouble getting their footing under them at first with everything so new? I don't know that they're going to get off to a 4-1 start or be able to just light it up right away. I wonder if it's going to take them a little bit of time. So, with potentially a start that takes some time for them to get their feet under them, I do think they've got good pieces. I think Harris is a good quarterback, and I think it's not the same as Mike Riley, but it's going to take some time. But I think he's a gamer, and I think he's going to be able to get good things done. So. I would say a middle-of-the-way season. I don't think they're going to blow the doors off, but I think they'll be a playoff team, and I think it'll be a decent season that we're talking about.
Sagar, I talked about this a month ago, and people were like, oh, I'm not sure. But as we get closer, Semyon Varlamov on a one-year deal for the Edmonton Oilers, because, there's still some question marks with Koskinen, no question, right? And I don't think Varlamov's numbers the last few years are going to command a big salary at all. And definitely, I'd be surprised in a long-term deal. What do you think of Varlamov as the guy to come in here and split duty / be the backup?
What's the number? That's what matters. What's the
2.5 to 3 million.
That puts him six.
Yeah. And what you got to do, Gregs, is you got to weigh it off against what the other options are. So, you know, would he be a decent option to come in and be a backup at that number? Sure. You know, could he play some games for them and he's got lots of experience? Yes. But it becomes a matter of weigh that off against what the other options are. So what does McElhaney or Kincaid or somebody like that, what does that number look like? And that's really, you have to kind of compare apples to apples by saying, okay, it's Varlamov on a one-year deal at this number, or it's, you know, the other guys at this number. I think they would like to get something done for less money than that at the backup position. But it's not easy. And you need somebody that has some experience, and that's not always easy to find. I like McElhaney. I think that McElhaney can, I know he's a little bit older. The only question I have is if his performance in the postseason earns him a second year on a deal, if he's able to ask for that, and that might scare you away from him.
Yeah, it's a pretty old guy, like, you know, 37. Now, he doesn't have a ton of miles on him, so maybe.
Yeah, you're not asking him to play 65 games, right?
Yeah. No, that's fair. So we'll see. Now, Varlamov, I just think might, you know, have a prove me contract, so could be an interesting one. But I don't see them going with an inexperienced backup. I'll say that.
Yeah, I don't think they can. I don't think that Koskinen has proven himself enough to give you the comfort to go cheap on a backup. I think you need to bring someone in, spend enough money that you've got someone that has experience and has a track record of coming off the bench and contributing, and maybe even being able to carry it for a little while. It's just too soon to not insulate Mikko Koskinen with a viable option. It's just too soon for that.
Shauger, have yourself a great weekend. We will chat with you on Monday.
All right, sounds good, pal. Enjoy the game tonight.
You bet. That's Reiner Schaug from TSN.